much.
They never got me down.
Heat my shorts.
Your brain has the shell on it.
My love for you is like a truck bouncer.
Sit down calmly. Take a stress pill and think things over.
Well, I want math and a burrito.
Down to watch.
Welcome back, Down to Watch.
Welcome back.
So this tends to happen to me quite a bit. If I watch, let's say, like movies back to back, especially on the same day, I'll find interesting
a double feature.
Yeah, but it's not even meant to be like thematically connected, but I'll still find a connection between the things, just the way our brain works, right? Our patterns.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Recognizing things. But for the shows that we watched this week, I came to the conclusion that each show stylistically is trying to do things very uniquely, but mm-hmm. their subject matters are kind of reversed in what they're depicting. So if you follow me, so Sugar, very colorful, very LA-ish, very vibrant kind of color schemes. But it's a noir show, right? It's kind of like noir detective, which typically is black and white, similar to Ripley, right? Ripley in our show, in this new show on Netflix, is black and white, stark black and white. But if we remember the original Ripley movie and how they were wanting to depict like the colorful nature of Italy, it's actually more similar to Sugar. So I don't know. Sure. Like I was like, yeah, thinking about the juxtaposition of like stylistic choices.
It's almost as if the two shows agree to switch artistic styles.
Yeah,
and
they made a handshake
and then just went forward. Yeah,
they make it a handshake agreement through the frame. And one hand became color and to black and white.
Yeah. That is a much more, interesting look at the similarities between the shows. I noticed they're both named after the character's last name.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
That's what I noticed. The similarities.
I actually got hung up on the Watch podcast mentioning that they were talking about Ripley out of nowhere. And for some reason, I completely forgot that was the show we were covering. And I was like, oh, is that the alien show? I went back to that reference.
Yeah.
Like you said in the upcomings that you made
this
a joke about that.
This has happened to me so many times already that I read the name Ripley and I go, Ellen?
Yeah. You're like, wait a minute.
Oh, what happened to me was I watched Ripley and having seen the trailer before was somehow confused that it was in black and white. And I was like,
Really?
Did I somehow put the black and white setting on my computer here?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then I put on Sugar and it starts, lo and behold, in black and white. And I was like, okay, what's happening here?
Yeah. And it's in Japan randomly. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start with, I think we should start with Ripley just because.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, I just
how much more would you have liked a show about Ellen Ripley, though? God, that would have been better, right?
Yeah. Well, and just a side note that the Alien TV show that's coming from the guy who did Fargo and what's your Marvel show?
Legion.
Legion. Yeah, that guy is not going to do anything pertaining to the like direct connection to like Alien.
Noah
Hawley.
Hawley. I was going to say Wiley, but that's an actor, right?
That is an actor. And
yes.
Yeah, he's washed
from
up.
Donnie Darko.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And so I don't know. Like the Alien show, I think it's going to be more about corporate, like the corporate structure of the company.
What's the name of that? Cyberdyne? No, that's...
The Nostromo
Cyberdyne is from
was
what?
The ship, right?
Nostromo? Oh, the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. Where is Cyberdyne from?
Cyberdyne's a Terminator.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's the name of the Omnicorp? Where is the Omnicorp from? You just saw a documentary about this.
Really?
The Omni Corporation?
Omni. I don't know.
What didn't you watch the RoboDoc?
Oh, I did. Oh.
Yeah, it's the RoboCop company.
Oh, it was called Omni. I was going to say, I think of the symbol.
I think it's Omni Consumer or something.
Yeah, it's like a weird like blocky O.
It's a bunch of circles. Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. Any way. Okay, let's go to Rome, 1961.
Wow.
Ripley, I forgot totally that the talented Mr. Ripley and this show take place in like the late 50s to early 60s.
I should confess I have not seen the film.
Oh really?
Okay. The Talented Mr. Ripley, okay, starring
Matt Damon
as Thomas Ripley, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Jude Law plays Dickie Greenleaf, who mm-hmm. in this is the guy from well, it's funny, dude, I realized like it took me a minute to place him where I was like, oh, where do I recognize this dude? And we talked about Lovesick a lot and the actors mm-hmm. in him. This guy is the lead of Lovesick.
We mentioned it. We mentioned that he was the lead of Lovesick.
Oh, in the upcomings? Oh, yep. We did. Okay. But I thought we mentioned some other Lovesick characters too.
Well,
recently,
we mentioned
right?
that the Ripley gentleman. Character is played by Moriarty from right. Sherlock.
Well, that and no, the gentleman has a Lovesick character too, which we covered recently. So there's a lot of Lovesick right. characters that we.
They're coming up.
Yeah, they're coming back around. They're a little older, a little rougher around the edges, but. And it's funny here. That we have two Brits playing Americans,
yeah,
which is kind of different.
And Dakota Fanning is in fact American.
Exactly. So she's just doing her usual thing.
She's from Converse, Georgia, so that you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is a book, right? The Ripley series.
Yes. Yeah. It's based on books? The Talented Mr. Ripley, a 1955 crime novel. So that makes sense. The time okay. period makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I think they must have placed this then a little later. I think I was kind of reviewing what the movie time period was, and it's like, yeah, they say late 1950s. So maybe the book takes place in the future. I don't know. But
I do want to ask you, because I haven't seen the film, the character of Tom Ripley at the beginning of the film, is he unlikable?
I don't remember. The movie that much other than like some of the Italian scenes, and they have that famous like Mambo Italiano song. Do you remember that, where they're mm-hmm. singing?
I know the song, sure.
Have you seen I thought maybe you had seen the clip of like Jude Law and Matt Damon singing it like on a stage in Italy or whatever, you know?
Mm-mm, no, I don't think
very
so.
Very celebratory. But yeah, you're right. Like this TV show is presenting a bumbling Tom Ripley who is not likable, but also is not really that good at being whatever he's trying to be, conniving and whatever. Like we see him fail with the check scheme of charging people for past due amounts and sending it to an address, and he can't cash it. So you're right. I don't remember. I want to say because it was Matt Damon and he was very young at that time. That movie was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was probably, they were trying to portray him as more likable and more crafty. I'm going
to
say that.
Yeah, like this kind of, to me, it lives and dies on whether you can believe that the con man at the center of this is so charming as to be able to get your confidence. I feel mm-hmm. like this is like, this is a con man show in the age of cringe. So like, it's mm-hmm. a con man who somehow uses uncomfortable situations as his like way to make people follow his schemes kind of thing.
Yeah, there is like a setting up, and I think this might've been in the original thing, is like setting up triggers that like you can help save your guy that you're into / want his life in general or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he purposely will put obstacles up so he can help solve them and be the savior and be more embraced, right? So there's a certain effect to that. But it's like he's still bumbling, right? Like even he's handed on a silver platter this situation that he can't believe. He burns all his shit. He's moving to Italy forever, basically, is what it seems like. Or mm-hmm. that's his next destination. And then even when he gets to Italy, he still is, for one, out of shape because he has trouble going up them stairs. Like,
yeah.
Even though he's from New York, which is kind of strange because most New Yorkers walk a lot.
It didn't seem like a wild trek either. It was all on the guy's property, right?
No, I think it was the town. He had to go through that base of the town,
and the guy
tells him in the hotel, like, oh, you got to go up the stairs all the way up to the high villa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because everything in most parts of like the coastal Italy.
Oh, I was thinking of the part where they go to the girl's,
her little office.
Dakota Fanning's, her little cottage thing.
That I don't think they were showing him as like walking too much.
He's like gasping for breath.
Oh, is he still
climbing the hill? Yeah.
That I don't know. That does seem like it could have been partly connected, but I took it as like. She's in a little bit more remote part of the town area. Yeah.
Okay.
And he's got so much money that he's just renting freaking property on the ocean. No problem, you know? So the opening of this starts in Rome, 1961, with a dead body being pulled down the stairs, who we can presume is probably Dickie, right? Greenleaf. Yeah. That's the way I, or Greenleaf. That's why I kind of took that, because then we flash back 6 months earlier. And now we're going to start going into a little bit of Tom and like what's going on in his life leading up to getting contacted by Dickie's father, who's played by a filmmaker. I didn't recognize this guy, but then I just saw his name, Kenneth Lonergan. He's a famous writer-director, very accomplished filmmaker.
Okay.
And I don't think he's really known for acting per se, but...
I don't recognize any of his films outside of Manchester by the Sea.
Okay, yeah, that was probably the last one. It got a lot of awards. Oh,
he co-wrote Gangs of New York.
Yeah, You Can Count on Me. That was a, he's a writer on that. That was a pretty big one. Margaret was a good movie. I remember seeing a little indie movie. But yeah, he's not a, he's kind of like an under the radar guy, but still an accomplished filmmaker. So that's kind of a funny cameo. And I really don't know how much his dad's necessarily going to be like. Oh, it does say he's in 4 episodes out of the 8.
Okay.
So I guess he'll be back. He'll be popping back up. So yeah, that's the same story kind of as the movie. From the description I was reading, it seemed more like it was on Tom to suggest in a situation where he meets the dad that he was friends with, or is friends with his son. And then that's what prompts him to like, kind of, he kind of welcomes himself into that role instead of just being thrust or given it, you know, out of nowhere.
Well,
right. Cause there's no real reason, right? We don't really know why this is being
contacted. And that's the problem to me with this character. Like, if we're going to accept that is this Batman Begins of Tom Ripley? Because then like he's just figuring it all out right now, I guess. But then like all this crazy elaborate plan occurred to him like in the spur of the moment. Like he just kind of like came up with this like deep, or he has been at this for a while. He's good at like pulling scams like this. Mm-hmm. But the character that we're watching fumbling around here, it doesn't seem like he's good at anything. It seems in fact, the number one thing a con man does is gain confidence. And it seems like that's the number one thing he can't do is like, as soon as somebody has like an inkling of that he is doing something bad, they're on him and he can't get off of them. Like he cannot win them over. I guess to a certain extent, with the exception of Dakota Fanning, who I did really appreciate that the way that he wins her over is by heavily criticizing her writing. And then she's like, yeah, that was honest. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, did you watch 2 episodes?
Nope, just the one.
Oh, okay. I think it was in the second episode, though, we learned that she is not really accepting of him. And then...
well, she makes it pretty clear throughout the first episode.
That she's not really,
that she's suspicious, and with perfect reason, he is highly suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not until the second episode he decides to technically the next day after meeting with Dickie, tell him the truth about he's there to help his to give him some stuff from his dad.
Yeah,
but that he's not intending to, you know, tell his dad everything. Because he wants to hang out there, obviously.
Right. Yeah. So to me, the show starts off okay because I thought that was very obvious manipulation.
Uh huh.
Like he was like so clearly like he is going. Imagine if I come to you this way. I go, they have sent me here with this mission, but I am such a fan of your happiness that I am throwing this mission away and won't do it. I can't think of anything more like contrived to make you like somebody. Like it's so like, it seems so very obvious that he's like, I am your friend and your hero. Hello and welcome, you know, like.
And this is something I remember from the movie feeling like, how is it that somebody's like being embraced and they don't remember meeting the person, but knowing the circles that these people go in and the idea that maybe they're doing a lot of drugs and they just meet so many people in high society that they're just
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And they're just very welcoming and they want to hang out with people and maybe they're a little lonely. They don't have many friends. And he's a an American in this foreign place, so why not just bring him into the fold? Plus, you have that rich person thing where you're, yeah, I think it's literally just boredom where you want some excitement, and so it's like, oh, we got this new person to like just be my little kind sure. of pet in a way. Yeah,
that's kind of like the kind of thing they go through in was that movie Sugar something? Sweet Garden, what's it called? About the rich house where that guy comes to hang out, and by the end of the movie, he's killed everybody.
Oh yeah, Saltburn.
Saltburn. Hey, that was close. Sweet Garden, Saltburn. We're on there.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that film.
But yeah, similar ideas. You get that impression yeah. from a lot of and I should say I have never been irresponsibly wealthy, so I don't know that this is for true or false. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of movies and TV shows, we get that impression that rich people all kind of lose each other in wealth, and yeah. they all vaguely know each other, but there's no real connection.
Right.
Right. It reminds me a lot of how none of them really recognize each other in American Psycho. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's good comp too. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. That's like so we understand that as like the nature of this world, and I'm accepting yeah. of that. But in the second episode, there's like this situation where Tom meets a guy at a cafe without Dickie there and asks him to like do a job.
Hey, are you sure? Did I watch two episodes of this? I think I watched two episodes of this.
Say, did you see that part too?
Yeah, I saw that.
You watched it?
Okay, because yeah, he goes to the. I must have. I wasn't paying attention, and the autoplay, that dastardly autoplay. he also meets another, and I can only guess at where this is going because I've read and watched some mysteries. Uh-huh. They meet another friend of Dickie's at a cafe, who says that they recognize Tom from somewhere.
Oh,
and
he's right?
trying to guess where they're from. They're saying like, oh, maybe at this person's parties or right. something like right. that. And Tom is like, just no, just shutting them down. And I'm the whole time I'm thinking, yeah. God, man, I'm not a con artist.
Yeah.
But here's a perfect place yeah. to somewhat insinuate yourself into places where you might have been
yeah.
without ever landing directly on, yes, that was definitely me.
Right.
He could, what does he say? The person okay. they meet at the playwright. The yeah, playwright. No, he's yeah. a playwright.
Uh-huh.
The playwright they meet says, I've seen you at I don't know, the Smiths, let's say. Yeah. The Smith parties.
Yeah.
The easiest thing is Tom to go, I've been to one or two, maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, he's straight up like, no, definitely not. 100% no. What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, I know, dude. I don't understand the exact angles. And so that's what makes me curious, because in these first two episodes, other than the look of the show and like there's a certain vibe to the show that they're going for that's very obviously black and white and obviously trying to like be very stark about what we're saying, which I appreciate. I love the black and white, but this only takes you so far before I start to question, like,
stylistically it's pretty doing? There's a lot of shots in them that are the opposite of Dickie's paintings, we're not alone. Oh, you want to talk about Dickie's art for a little while?
No, it's just the dad preps us for it because he says he's not a painter or a writer, even though he likes to act like he is, and he does seem, and when we meet Dickie, he is kind of humble where he's just like, I know they're not that good, and maybe he's just playing modest, but still it's like you know, and even I don't know if Tom knows art. Like, he obviously recognized the Picasso and he saw dollar signs when he saw that in the
what we're finding out about Ripley I think is that he understands everything without passion. He can tell you the dollar value of a painting. He can tell you how much it means to other people. Right. He would not be able to tell you how beautiful it is.
Right. That's interesting. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Which is there are good things to this show. What's his name? What's Moriarty's name? I can't. Is it
Andrew Scott?
Andrew Scott. He's good. He's good at what they're telling him to do. Yes. He is accomplishing the character that they're asking him to portray. I just don't buy that character as being master con artist, or to be honest, even getting this far. His talents would not have gotten him as far as he has.
Yeah. And it was okay, so wasn't there a character, I'm just thinking of this now too, The Great Gatsby, wasn't there a character called Ripley? Or who's The Great Gatsby?
Oh, wow. There's a three main characters in The Great Gatsby. There's Gatsby, who is the character that the writer is visiting to learn about. There's Zelda, that's the girl's name, right? Oh, no. I'm thinking of a different... Sorry. There's... It's not,
Daisy,
that's not what's,
Tom Buchanan.
Daisy.
Yeah, maybe I'm confusing Ripley with Daisy. No, that seems weird. I don't know, okay, but I was
here
just...
We got the three characters here.
No, there's
nope,
nobody.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, Nick. Nick is the writer. Jay Gatsby and Daisy Buchanan. Okay, so Jay Gatsby is the rich guy who's bored of life. Daisy Buchanan is like a side piece who Nick is actually in love with.
Yeah.
And they traipse around doing bored rich people shit.
Right. And doesn't he bring in a character that's also... That's the one we're following. I guess he is more...
No, Nick is the one. Yeah, Nick is... Yeah. He is not a rich person. He's a writer.
He's kind of a more writer guy. Yeah, yeah. And he's just brought
in...
Oh,
no, he's not.
World.
He's a bond salesman. I thought he was a writer. I don't know why I thought he was a writer.
But he's not nefarious, right? He's just kind of brought into the mix.
Yeah, he's just... Yeah, he's the narrator of the book. He doesn't... Okay. He's not from their world.
Okay. Anyway, I don't know why I brought that up. I thought there was something else there. So this... show, I don't know, like I think we have to assume that this is playing very closely to how the novel is more than the movie, so I'm trusting what they're going for here.
Okay.
And I think there's something to be said too about his past, right? Because he, with that letter he writes, is that to his mom that we're
the one where he asked for more money?
No, it was something about... Oh, no, it was something about money, about how like you don't have to pay.
That letter was to his dad, to Dickie's dad, saying like, oh, you know how Dickie can be. He's hard to convince. But I'm making progress. Little by little, I'm convincing him. Could you send more money, please?
Okay. No, what was the lady who's sitting in that chair at the dentist office and he's writing her a letter saying, you don't owe me more money? And it keeps intercutting between that lady. And he's writing it with the pen.
I don't remember that.
He stole a pen from Dickie and wrote it in really nice like handwriting. And I thought, I don't know. It was confusing exactly... who that person was and why he was writing that. Because obviously I think Ripley has some kind of traumatic, weird past that we don't even know
of
about
course.
Yet. That's
he
like
wasn't a born psychopath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, or like because of maybe some mental health issues and mixed with already being a sociopath creates a psychopath, you know, something like that. I don't know.
But that's fine. That could be interesting, but they're not compelling a character unless they're accomplishing something. What people love to see is people with talented people accomplishing using their talents, even if it's evil stuff. We still like to see people do like accomplishing, right? Like it's cool. And so this, what I think, at least in what apparently came out to two episodes that I've seen, the thing that I have the biggest problem is that at no point does Ripley like succeed in pulling off his you don't see him set up and then accomplish a scam. Like you see a lot of beginnings of scams and you see a lot of him messing up, but you don't see the conclusion of a setup.
Right.
And so it's hard to like care what made this person such a conniving creep when his creepy connivingness doesn't accomplish anything. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, why can't you just have, and maybe he does and we just don't see it, like a normal job also to pay his bills? Because presumably, like based on his existence, it's like, he seems lonely. It seems like a, you know, very small little room in like a, I don't know if we see the building that much. Oh yeah, we see him using a shower that looks like it's like a tenement building where you have like a shared shower for the whole floor. And then the telephone, you have to use like a payphone. Or maybe he does that to cover his tracks outside of his house, but presumably he doesn't have even a phone in his, let alone a TV in his apartment. So, so it just like begs the question of like, who this guy is just, I don't know, he's just bumbling. And we don't see a real solid plan yet, which is interesting too, I guess, because you're just like, oh, he fell into a situation. Now we're going to see him like solving the problems and how to get, because obviously he wants to become Dickie, We see the body, so presumably at some point he's trying to figure out how to get the money. We see the bank account thing. He's like,
yeah. Well, more than anything, we see the scene where he dresses up and acts like Dickie, and that scene is awful. That is just the worst scene in the whole two episodes that I saw. I was like, this is, and I knew it was going to happen, of course. You're like, Dickie's going to get here. He's going to see him. It's going to be weird. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. And
yeah, and he's like acting like he's going to break up with the girlfriend, Dakota Fanning's
character. The whole thing, like Dickie's just constantly doing this, like staring into the middle distance as if he's deciding what to do. But it's like, there's not really a decision here, bro. Like, there's not anything for you to decide,
right? And that's what, so the thing with that I mentioned earlier, that we I wanted to see, like, so bringing in that mob dude, is this again just like a miscalculation,
right,
by Tom or Ripley, is he thinking doing, like,
but you have, there's, so there's there's things that the show is not showing us, and that's this was a plan by him to cause some sort of a disruption, you know?
Right Yeah. And then also and it's weird because it's like, you don't need the money. Maybe he thinks he'll do it just like because he's a bored rich guy, which obviously he's not willing to risk.
Well, he also wanted to get him away from
Dakota.
Yeah.
But also it's like, I think he's having trouble turning off his brain from little scams because now he's on to the huge big fish. So it's like, dude, you don't need to do that. But obviously, I don't know. You think that might come back into the picture, that stuff with the mob guy? Oh,
for sure. 100%. Okay. That mob guy is going to rob that dude's house. Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, I would not be surprised if Dickie's body was produced by the mob guys and not whatchamacallit.
Well, the only thing is, though, is that that was in Rome and they're in Naples right now.
That's right.
That's the only thing that I'm wondering how we get from, because obviously at some point he finds a way and they go to Rome, maybe just to travel or whatever. Yeah. So, so we have some more to do in this 6-month period. Yeah,
I'll tell you one thing the show's not doing, and that's something that I think the movie, I haven't seen it, but I heard, is making him scary. From what I understand, the character of Tom Ripley is a frightening character. When he is not turning the charm on, when you see behind like his smile, you understand that the teeth are actually shark's teeth. And so then moving forward, every time you see him flash those pearly whites, you don't see the shiny teeth, you see the shark's teeth, right? Like that's kind of the like fun of Ripley, is that he lets you in on what it is to be a creep wandering around the world tricking people. But this dude's not creepy. Like, he's creepy, he's not scary. Like Dickie, the only reason Dickie fails to defeat, let's say, Ripley is because Dickie is an even more wimpy, ineffective, like, person, sort of a thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. There's just a lot of questions, which is like, that's fine. I'm curious because the pacing seems very deliberate too, like in these first two episodes. And I was looking at like user review rankings for or ratings for each episode, and the first two are by far the lowest ranked, and then from there episode 3 is the highest ranked, and then episode 8 is the second highest. So I think there is more.
That being said, the critics have come back after seeing the whole series, and it is very mixed. Like mixed. There's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad, there's a lot of very good, there's a lot of very bad.
For critics, you mean?
Yeah. I think Vanity, whoever's over at Vanity Fair, called it soulless, I think.
Yeah, I can see that, but that's, and then I don't
the
mind
BBC
that.
BBC called it a masterpiece, I believe.
Yeah. I can see.
Kind of all over the place.
Yeah, and that more reflects the critic, obviously, than the thing in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure. I pulled those two particular because they're not like watch movies on light.booger or whatever, because they're like, I expect them to have journalists who are trying to make good and intelligent points over at the BBC and Vanity Fair. So I think those are probably worthwhile at least to pay attention to.
Yeah. I'm curious the arc of this character and if we go in some different directions than we're just like assuming is going to happen, where he takes over Dickie's, like, I feel like Dickie can't die until maybe the last episode, if that is even him, for sure. I don't even remember. I don't remember if Jude Law died. I don't remember if he killed Jude Law by the end.
I Sounds think presumable. He is a murderer, so I think he does murder.
Yeah, but this might be his first. Sense. That might be his first murder, you know? Because there's many books too. Like this was the first.
Right. Doesn't stop. He keeps going. He gets away with it a lot. This is in that's another thing. Is he supposed to be an anti-hero? He's a villain that you root for. I'm not 100% sure.
I know. I'm reading also.
Oh, what were you reading?
Well, no, just that somebody said that it's like he's a protagonist. Villain. Kind of, but like, or somebody that you bizarrely root for in terms of the novels.
I'm thinking of Hannibal Lecter, characters right. like that, you know.
But I'm not feeling like
that's where I was going to get to. That this character doesn't have that charm.
Yeah.
And then the character beats of his that I think that are supposed to be unique are played with very clumsily. And I'm going to go ahead and point out it's nice to hear pretty words from pretty girls. And the guy and his response is, I like girls.
Yeah.
What?
Right.
Yeah. What?
Oh. Well, and that was obviously he's awkward because he's gay, you know, and he's
trying to cover. That was like. That was like the writer saying he is now being awkward because he's gay, in large block letters.
The only thing that kind of saves it, because maybe it is so obvious to everybody except for Tom that he is coming off this way in some way. But the response by Dickie is just like a little chuckle laugh. He doesn't just like respond and say something else that's like even more. So I didn't mind that because I thought that was
but do this for me. Yeah. Make it so that. Ripley did that on purpose, right?
Right. Like, I know.
Make it so that he answered that way awkwardly and was doing it so that what's his name? I already forgot his name.
Dickie.
Yeah. So that Dickie will look at him with a little bit of pity, you know?
Right.
Like that's a con man. That's interesting. Right. And you know what? Maybe he even is. Maybe this character is doing that, but this show does not show us that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if he's like, now that I'm reading some things too, that he's like more like a serial killer. I wonder if he's like 30% con man and like 70% just like killer. You know what I'm saying? Like he's more proficient at that. And like he does just enough to get by with the conning to then kill people or something.
Where
you know?
That's not I how I understood the talented, from what I understood,
right.
The talented Mr. Ripley's talents were parasocial. That's what I understood.
Yeah, that's what I would think. But then it says that he has antisocial narcissism, which right. I guess you
this
could still
like,
have. But
this looks like Dexter, you know?
Right. But Dexter, at least, like, we see, or at least the parts we saw on the TV show, is like genius at like coming across.
And he had that human. And he had that killer voiceover, too.
Yes, he did.
Of course. Sure
did. All right, should we get to the show with the voiceover?
Was that a?
Should we move on to our show with a voiceover?
Before we do, I want to ask, are you going to keep watching Ripley?
Yeah, I feel compelled to, knowing it's strictly, they're saying, very limited series, even though obviously that could be whatever. And they could do a whole different thing if they did like another season stylistically. But this thing does feel like of a piece, you know, and within itself. And knowing that from what these people are saying, if I'm trusting kind of people's... individual episode reviews, it's got to get a little bit better, more pacing maybe, and more direct. So I'm curious.
Netflix is a very unforgiving for shows that don't hit. So I can see this thing getting squashed after a first season.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. They're calling it a limited series. So like, I think if anything, the director will not be back to do more. So
I would be surprised if Netflix doesn't call a lot of things limited series that they're just testing, you know?
It could be, yeah. And it's like, if it is based just like on one book, though, then you could say, yeah, this is a limited series. But it also could be like...
and we'll come back if we want to do the other books.
Right, yeah, that's fine. And it's in the top 10 right now. I saw that it hit that. So that's a big deal. Like I was hearing with Three Body Problem, I think I sent you the article that... It like was not sustaining the first place position for a show that costs like $20 million an episode is not good.
But did you see that it did something that shows never do?
What?
It somehow retook the first place spot.
Oh, is that right? Oh, yeah. Interesting, because mm-hmm. word of mouth may be in a delay. Okay. So, yeah, that's
and
why
the thing that overtook it, and the thing yeah. that overtook it was specifically a Christian thing, and it overtook it the weekend of Easter. So they're saying, it was a special. It was because right. people were watching specifically Christian things.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, because Three Body Problem really is like it's setting itself up like it's literally a pilot season for the rest of like three or four seasons it's supposed to be mm-hmm. told. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. We'll see.
Dan, before we start talking about the next show, I'm going to describe it much in the way that you might have described what we were just talking about right now.
Okay.
Season-long premise pilot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not exactly the term. I smashed those words together that way after listening to somebody talk about how they feel like this first season of Sugar appears mm-hmm. to be an entire season setting up the premise of a pilot.
Oh, you've heard people actively say that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, I can see that. And it's funny that we're just talking about the same idea right now.
Yeah, it is. It is very connected. It's one word titles. It's the name of the guy title. It's very centered on that one person. And then it's also like not giving us a lot of background of origins of this person.
And it does feel like it's asking you to commit for a season before you get.
Right. And because the episodes, like at least the second one's like very short, and it makes sense when you follow like one character mainly. I think it is more likely that people will, you know, be willing to go through with it. Instead of it being 8 hours, if it's like maybe 5 hours over eight episodes.
We also know that this show, Sugar, is an Apple TV Plus show, and they're a little bit more discerning when it comes to what they put out, what mm-hmm. they put their money into. Mm-hmm. And I think to that extent, people who subscribe to Apple TV Plus are also a little bit more forgiving because they get so little brand new product from Apple TV that they're like, all right, you know, give this show a little bit more of a shot. Whereas Netflix viewers, they're inundated by shows, you know, brand new shows every week. So shows don't get much of a chance.
Right. Or I'll say this too, is that Apple is kind of, because also they don't have that much content, they release weekly. So they only put out two, maybe three initially, and then it's week to week after that. So this show, I think, benefits big time from that because the first episode just kind of ends and the second one just kind of ends too. But I feel very compelled just to jump to the...
It's funny because we picked two shows this week and we kicked the idea around of just doing one and doing more episodes of it. We ended up doing the two shows, and then the reviews started to come in for both shows as maybe a couple days before today, before recording.
Yeah.
And I saw a big split down the middle for both shows. I saw both shows getting plenty of negative reviews.
More positive for both than negative for sure, but still like some of those might be maybe in the middle or something, but still, yeah.
And you're used to seeing shows that get positive reviews have, let's say, positive to middling, not positive and negative, right?
Right. Yeah.
But for sure, I saw some pretty negative reviews about Sugar, a show that appears to be, just on the surface, a sort of an old school noir gumshoe detective LA story. It's a bunch of words I just smashed into a sentence right there. This has a couple of twists. The character of John Sugar, as played by the very, very good Colin Farrell. Let's establish that Colin Farrell is excellent in this.
Yeah.
And in really almost like anything. Yeah. And almost everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
He has a couple of quirks. One is that he really likes movies, and that's something that the editor will play with throughout the show to, I think, mostly positive effect. I'm not going to say completely perfect, but mostly positive.
But it's different. It's something different and fun, and it puts us in the mindset of our main guy.
And the other aspect about him is that he is, from what I can see, basically the opposite of an anti-hero. He is like the most, and he's not brand new, but I think to a certain extent, it reminds me a little bit of Reacher.
Oh, interesting. in like that, a little bit of Ray Donovan too, but not as like
evil. Yeah, like, although Ray Donovan had more dirt under his fingernails.
Sure. For sure.
Whereas, like, I don't know if you remember, but when we did the Reacher show, for the first season, I described Reacher as he has all of the superpower. Or no, he has all of the luck and all of the skills, but his real superpower is in that everybody likes him. Right. Even if they hate him, within a day, they can't help but begrudgingly respect him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's his real superpower, is that he's just very charming and everybody likes him.
Right.
Like, the Sugar takes this one step further and he goes, and everyone likes him because he is the goodest person ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really good... Yeah, and it's like in a world of such darkness of like kidnapped people trying to find lost people, it's like inherently like he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart in a way, even though he seems to have a very nice lifestyle and have
it, it just seems money. Like he it makes but, it bums him out for bad stuff to happen, so he wants to change that.
Yeah, he can be a force for good, and like this is all comprised in that very touching moment with the homeless guy.
Oh sure, it was actually a very beautiful scene.
Yeah it was great. Yeah, and the setup for it, you're kind of like, oh, is he doing this as a way to like I don't know, you're just can't believe how like nice he's being, just to ask the guy to watch his car later. Yeah. When he comes out that night, gives him the money, gives him a phone, trying to take care of him.
I mean, where we really get like above and beyond is, he gives, it's a smooth move. First of all, when they pull up to, I don't know, a high mom or whatever it was called, the bar. Yeah, I'm like,
I forget
that
called.
Is Bordner's. I know that sign. That is Bordner's.
Oh, that is that right?
Pulled up to. Yeah.
I was going
to
say, I haven't been in there, but I've been near.
It's like, a spot that you've seen. If you've ever tooled around Hollywood, you've seen that. The outside of that place.
Yeah.
He said, and he does that very cool, like be nice to the people that are unseen. Right. When you're nice to the unseen people, you'll gain a benefit that other people don't normally gain. That's a movie thing that a lot of these types of characters do. The real turn is that when he comes back, he completes the interaction, leaves the phone gives him the flip phone that he had, and I was wondering if that was gonna happen. I was like, he's probably gonna leave him the phone. I wonder how much logic that makes, considering it's a phone. Like, it's not like he's gonna keep paying for it. Like I was trying to think of the logic.
Yeah.
When Sugar dives into a conversation about, do you have family? And that's when the show turned me a little bit on what this character is.
Yeah.
Because this character, he stops talking to the homeless man, and he basically turns to camera and he goes, hey, people, homeless people are humans.
Yeah.
Like, let's treat homeless people with respect.
Yeah.
This man has a sister. Yeah. In another state, who is living a perfectly normal life and thinks that her brother is as well.
Yeah.
That's how human this person is.
Right.
So watch Sugar treat him like a human. And that's what the phone was for. So he could call his sister. And I was like, that was a damn good... That's how... It reminded me of the way that The Good Place baked moral lessons into a show about a silly, like, hell dimension.
Right.
Like, it snuck a moral lesson into a show about a guy being really cool. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's what, like, presented with me, like, the idea, like, because you're literally not given any answers to why he's having these, like, hallucinogenic-type episodes where he's, like, out of time and space in moments. And, like, remember, like, there's two distinct moments. Like, one towards the beginning when he's walking up to that house and he starts to, like... not faint, but he gets like some kind of weird vision issue where he's seeing like double vision. And then later in the shower, he seems like he's bleeding from his cut profusely out of nowhere, which...
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he just wakes up in a daze in the shower like he didn't know what happened. So there's like a weird thing that I'm starting to... And this is a pie in the sky idea. And I think I might be philosophically close to it, but I was starting to think that he was an angel.
Interesting.
That
forgot that he was an angel?
Well, no, that he's an angel, but it's like, because we know he works for an organization that he mentions something about the local cell disbanded of somebody in Japan. And then this lady that he works with, they're just like, they seem like they operate outside of like any kind of specificity of like human existence. And
wait, you're talking about the black lady?
Yeah, the black lady, yeah.
Okay, but she also has a lot of like tangible like connections too. Like her job is very human. It's, you know, it's like procuring him documents that he needs and
but nothing past that is what I'm saying. Like, we're not getting right. anything.
Well, she's a handler. That's what it seems like she is.
No, for sure. Yeah. And it's a very clean cut.
Or type. Like a fixer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the Ray Donovan had the same lady that was really badass. I don't know if you remember her. Kind of a punk rock.
That's cool. I always like that. That's always my favorite character in shows like this.
So
unless it's Baby Driver and then I don't like him.
Right. Right. and it's just like anytime anything's mentioned about Sugar's personal life or having a personal life, mm-hmm. he's always poo-pooing it and just acting like, no, you know, I'm not that. Yes. And usually that in a detective story, it's kind of like, oh, I can't trust anybody or like I got a crazy past. And I think he does have some kind of a past for sure.
Because yeah, of the he comes sister. From somewhere.
Yeah,
I wrote sister. Down John Sugar from Cincinnati.
But, there you go. I like that. Well, he was an angel. He was like an angel. Right, character
he was
too.
Jesus, wasn't he? I thought he was Jesus.
I forget. It was something.
I never saw that show. I only heard the discussion around it.
Yeah, it was a crazy idea. But
Dan, I have a worse prediction for you. Okay. Your prediction is so much better.
I could be, and I hope I'm
completely. Is that about whether it's possible or impossible? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm saying about whether it makes the show good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I like your idea better than mine, but if I was a gambling man, and I'm not.
Last thing I'll just add is that.
Please.
So you mentioned on the upcomings about how like there's something supernatural or something like sci-fi-ish or something weird about this show.
Yes.
And so that was always in the back of my mind. And I didn't think of this until like the end of the first episode, I think, where I was just like, and maybe the beginning of the second. Anyway, so please like give me your
I thought you were going to say it. I thought you had an idea.
No, I'm just telling you where that came from. Oh, keeping it in mind what you had said initially.
So yeah. The angel thing is a little bit better, although I described in the upcomings how similar to the OA, I don't like when it becomes a spiritual twist.
Yeah, I don't think it's AI related or like technological, right?
So you don't think it's AI related, no. But I was going to bring up another show.
Okay.
Do you remember a little television program, either the UK or the US version, called Life on Mars?
I remember hearing about it. I don't know. I never saw it. Yeah.
That is a good show does something very crazy at the end.
Oh, wait. Hold on. And let me test my... is this a British show where...
I wasn't gonna tell you. I was gonna keep it, but I just wanted to mention that what it does, the problem that it does, I'm afraid is gonna hurt this show very much, and that's that it makes it so that all the things that you saw didn't matter.
Right, right. Yeah,
you remember
after Neil Fetter heard it back in. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's like so I could see something like that too.
The original TV show. I'm sorry. The I didn't see the original TV show. I saw the American remake. But let me tell you, the American remake was starring Harvey freaking Keitel, and that was dope as hell. They're basically 70s cops, but like very clearly in like cheesy, not cheesy, but like stereotypical 70s cop TV world, to the point where the main character played by Jason O'Mara is like, this is a little cheesy, but it's still like cool. Mm-hmm. And Harvey Keitel, his partner, is super like that guy, like one of those guys. And can you imagine Harvey Keitel playing a 70s hard-boiled detective? Right. Yes, you can, because you've seen what's that movie?
So many things, like Mean Streets and
Goodfell, I was thinking of the crazy one. What's the really crazy one?
Wait, what's the
crazy? Port of Call? Bad Lieutenant. The original Bad Lieutenant, not Port of Call, New Orleans. Okay, but the twist, I'm going to spoil that show. It's very old now, you guys. The twist is that the whole time these weird little robot creatures keep appearing.
Yeah.
And he's like, what is that? I don't get it. And it turns out at the end of the show, everybody in the show is actually astronauts. They're all on a spaceship that's like shooting them across the galaxy. The show, Life on Mars, is an AI like sleep program that's helping them like pass the time while they're like in cryosleep, except something went wrong on the ship, and the ship's Windy, the ship's computer Windy, as as the character Windy in the show, is trying to tell them something is wrong.
Oh, interesting. That's fun. Yeah, that's.
I might
way
have
out
some
there.
Of that wrong. I might have some of that. It's been a long time since I watched the show, but
like it was like 2008 was the modern time, and then it takes him back in the show to 1973. That's like where he's like a detective or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's and his neighbor is the Windy is his neighbor. That's the and I believe she represents the AI. Anyways, so, I'm afraid that this show might do something similar to that.
I did think that like this character is like out of time and space in some way with those like hallucinogenic thingies, mainly, I guess. And then the weird connection to Japan, because there is like another episode called I think it's episode 3 is like we know it's going to go back to Japan.
He does so mention Japan connection. A couple of times in the first episode too, though. The whole thing starts in Japan. In fact, very specifically starts with the appearance of an Akira Kurosawa movie in black and white, right?
Oh, is that right? Oh, I don't.
Does it not start in black and white in Japan? In Japanese?
Oh yeah, but I'm saying like did they show you a Kurosawa movie?
Oh no, I just assumed I just assumed a black and white Japanese looking dramatic scene to Americans translates to Kurosawa. Like that's just because we don't have a lot of like we can't. How many other Japanese black and white directors can you like pull?
Oh yeah, like that just is like only known for mainly black and white. Yeah, no, not many.
So something that the show does, we kind of alluded to it earlier, but this is a good example of how it kind of bleeds over. That scene, the scene at the beginning, is in black and white, as if John Sugar is in a black and white Japanese movie. He even speaks perfect Japanese, which then we'll see him speak other languages throughout the show, which almost make it look as if he's in a movie from those places,
right?
Because he's a natural speaker.
Yeah,
and we also get clips from movies intercut. Yeah. In the especially around the scenes where the show is taking on the sheen of an older movie or television show.
Yeah.
So it does seem like he's almost able to use visual fiction as an overlay to reality in order to like play out scenarios in his favor.
Right. And he keeps
Make sense?
Yeah, he keeps referencing to like movie scenario, like this could be like in the
even more
the
than movie. Anything, he likes to know what people's favorite movies are. He wants to know what their taste in film is,
and that
which
will
is,
speak to their. And we're told by the guys because we know they're bad guys because they don't know the movies. Remember, they make fun of or they poke fun of like, oh, he's got all these magazines of movies nobody's ever heard of before, you know. So they obviously aren't cultured in that way.
Yeah, you definitely saw that he had like obscure.
Dude, these
obscure
are my
taste.
Yeah, these are my type magazines. Like Sight and Sound is a UK-based film magazine that you can only get.
I recognize that one. I did not recognize the other one.
Cahiers de Cinema is a Spanish.
And how long have you been subscribed to that magazine, Dan?
No, I have.
You can tell they're good magazines because they're square.
Right. Yeah. Everything's very. And then American Cinematographer is the other one. So. And that's the thing is that like that's like the main things that we know about Bob Sugar. What's his name again? John
Bobby Shugs. What? Robert?
Johnny Sugar?
John Sugar.
John Sugar. He likes films. And then that's why by the end of this first episode too, I was like, oh, okay, I get it, dude. Like his language of like everything he's doing is like related to film. Like he sees Hollywood in terms of the movies that he's driving around in, basically, you know. So like at one point he goes downtown and he turns onto a street and it cuts to a 1950s image, and if you're not paying attention you won't realize it because it's not it's not that easy to recognize. You have to see the cars and be like, oh, okay, because it's very seamlessly put in there. And then there's also a lot of jump cutting, specifically like just randomly, like when he pulls the cell phone out of the car glove box, and then also in the bar, more obviously because he's drinking or whatever, but it's like random jump cuts with Amy Ryan as he's drinking with her too, which also speaks to some kind of, these are all related to his mind in some way and how he's functioning.
The fact that he can't get drunk no matter how much he drinks, yeah, it does kind of lend the angel thing a little bit of credence. Right. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
We do have some appearances by some other actors that we like. James Cromwell doing his James Cromwell thing. Always yeah. welcome. Yeah. There's nothing I can say about him. He's just doing his thing.
Yeah. So that's what gives me, and I just saw this, so that's probably why I'm saying it, but this like Chinatown vibe with the film sure. noir aspect, because sure. it's like Holly, like a guy, private eye guy trying to figure out what's going on with this rich family who's probably up to no good.
And crime in L.A., with James Cromwell involved, always wow. reminds me of L.A. Confidential. Like, oh, that sure. to me says like, oh yeah, oh sure, sure Cromwell's involved. He's yeah. probably guilty, but he seems like he's a nice guy.
Well, isn't it interesting too, is he like, he hires, or he seems interested in hiring Sugar, and then all of a sudden he's like following him everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And that part of that's the son, like other people are getting involved tangentially with the comings and goings of Sugar and what he's going to find out or whatever. Yeah, there's a lot of little pieces.
So, yeah, Cromwell will be fun to watch throughout the show. Who I'm not 100% excited to see in whatever this part turns out to be, despite yeah. liking him in general, Nate Cordry seems like a strange pick for this part. He's like the little rich boy, I guess. He's got his own little bodyguard that he carries around with him, and he catches John Sugar investigating his sister's apartment, his sister being the missing girl, Olivia Siegel, that he's looking for. Nate Cordry, bald little guy with a big buff pistol bodyguard.
Rob Cordry is his brother.
Yes, Rob Cordry is his brother.
Yeah, okay. I knew there was some connection there, but mm-hmm. I've seen this guy Nate Cordry around.
Bros.
Yeah.
Is it Nate or Rob in a Community?
I don't remember Rob Cordry in Community.
Yeah, he's a lawyer from the old firm where his name used to work.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, he's great. He's a very fun character.
That's funny. It probably, if it's like overtly funny, it's probably Rob.
Yeah. Rob. Yeah, it could be.
Nate's
they're both
a
funny.
More serious.
Which know, one like is the rules. One in Cheap Thrills?
That's Rob. Yeah. Okay. Rob's like top Hot Tub Time Machine, you know, all the big mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, I'm just going to click on Nick Cordry so I can tell you that he has been on Law & Order Criminal Intent, The Daily Show, United States of Tara, 30 Rock, and The New Girl, The Pacific, Studio 60, and The Sunset Strip. Okay. Oh, okay. So yeah. not more as sparse. Much work as his brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So he shows up, and his mom is a lady that I heard somebody point out is played by an actress 4 years older than him. The the mother figure of the Siegel family. An actress only 4 years older than
than
Nate. Yeah.
Like Amy Ryan? You mean Amy Ryan's?
Is Amy Ryan supposed to be their mom?
She's married to the dad.
But I think that's their stepmom, though.
Oh, maybe. That could be. Yeah.
Is that Amy Ryan, the one he meets at the bar? Yeah,
the
right?
bar, yeah. And okay, then she's divorced from Bernie Siegel.
That makes me think.
Yeah.
This is the only time in the show where I think the show screws up. Mm-hmm. Because in every single possible way, Sugar's a good guy. Like, mm-hmm. he never does anything bad. And with Amy Ryan, with Melanie, is that her name?
Melanie, yeah. That sounds right.
Okay. With Melanie, he does the very gentlemanly thing of not like getting down with her because she's drunk and he's not. This is the correct thing to do. She is not in a correct state of mind. He is. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning of their, when we meet, after we see them meet, and when we flash cut to them now, like joking around and being buds, she says, "You're not like a creep or a scary guy or whatever." Yeah. She names three things that he's not.
Yeah.
A sleaze. One of them is a sleaze. Uh-huh. And I go, that's not true. He is a sleaze. Because at no point throughout the entire night does he explain who he is.
Right.
He doesn't tell her that he is investigating the disappearance of her daughter.
Oh,
or stepdaughter.
Yeah, that's true, because he doesn't bring it up till the next day.
If they had, she wanted to hook up. If they had hooked up, even worse, he would have been like, oh, by the way, I had false pretenses this entire time.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
That is a sleazy thing to do.
I don't think he ever would have hooked. I think that just that drinking
but,
excuse
but
was an excuse.
Even leading it still, to that point,
it's
still pretty sleazy.
There is something there, where he is still a detective and he's got to get the job done.
He also says as he leaves her house pretty dispassionately, I'm not getting any answers out of her tonight. I was like,
right.
Wow, bro, that's pretty. Well, okay.
Yeah, but then it's interesting that follow up where, this is episode two, sorry. So,
go ahead.
Amy Ryan stops drinking literally the next day, and she had an AA meeting. Sugar shows up and sits down and hears her talk about how this nice man didn't take advantage of me when he could have, and he tucked me in, and he just was like very caring and whatever, like gave him the angel sure. vibes.
You know what, Dan? Oh, you're selling me on this angel thing, man. I know. You're really selling me on this angel thing.
So, just to add to that, because you didn't see this part, while he's sitting in the AA meeting, Amy Ryan's giving this great speech to all these people about like why we drink, why do we do these things, we're lonely, this and that, and then you hear Sugar like a voiceover thing say, he says they're lonely, something like that, where it's like very
they,
like separated.
Like humans.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Sure, sure. That's when I was just like, oh, there's another little something. Oh, and then the last thing I'll add with that is there's a injection he does, some kind of weird injection after he has that hallucinatory thing and then he sleeps it off. And there's something weird with that box. They kept showing that like there's like
right, he smacks
suitcase.
It. It's like the very suitcase. First thing, one of the very first things that happened.
Yeah.
So he's staring at it in a box, but they don't show it.
Yeah.
A thing that if they don't do it correctly, annoys the shit out of me, is like, what is this mysterious thing? We're not going to tell, teehee. And I'm not going to lie, it annoyed me a little bit in this show.
That's why, people, I think, are being like, come on, like, just give us a little more something. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I kind of like this mysterious aspect, I just hope it pays off.
Yeah.
You just hope that if you're going to do this, it's got to pay off. You know what I'm saying?
I'm curious. I like the idea that the world is ready for a different kind of hero. Mm-hmm. Like that this is the answer to your Mad Men's and your Breaking Bad and your Dexter's and watch this man do all the bad things and we root for him,
Yeah.
Maybe this is different. I don't think so. I don't think this is what people are asking for, but maybe. I don't know.
And the only thing I'll put against my angel thing in just terms of like, he does reference having a sister named Jen, and he's like, this is what happened.
Jen, but did you have
yes.
subtitles on? Oh, so you saw.
Because it was DJ.
It wasn't J-E, it was D-J-E-N.
Which is kind of like Jin, right? Like
exactly. It made me think that it was like Middle Eastern or something like that.
Popped in my mind for a second. I was just like, that's
which
a weird
could suddenly put it, make it biblical.
Right.
If it suddenly becomes Middle Eastern, then we're talking about biblical things, maybe.
And it could be sister, but not in the sense that we think of.
Yeah,
like
it could be the of the holy hosts of heaven. Sure,
spiritual sister,
possible.
Yeah. Another angel, perhaps.
Overall, the show I think threatens to become overly schmaltzy, overly
it's
like
close.
Like sugary. And I mean, the guy's name is Sugar.
I'll say this on that front. The homeless guy dies in episode two.
Okay.
Sugar finds him in a hotel room. I don't know how exactly. Oh, he tracks the phone maybe? Because the phone the guy had, he gets into the hotel room. Some two guys are over this dude's dead body. He OD'd. He bought drugs, OD'd. Maybe presumably those guys got him the drug. Who knows for sure? He throws one guy against the wall because he was about to like rob or do something to the homeless guy and smashes him against the wall. And then you hear a voiceover. He's like, I don't like to hurt people, but and he didn't really hurt him that bad, but he just kind of roughed him up a little bit. And then he takes the dog. So anyway,
I mean, sure.
So we got to see the other side of like, because then he does put it on the homeless guy. He's just kind of like, damn it, Chuck or whatever his name was,
You should have done better kind of a thing.
But it's like, it's just like another thing in the...
I'll tell you what. It's a character that I don't... It's a character I don't see often. It's at least nowadays. It's different. I was trying to think of that whole premise of like, I should explain. We said at the beginning of this, but I didn't really explain it. The season-long premise pilot.
Right.
So it does seem like a lot of shows, there used to be this thing where people would say, oh, this show doesn't get good until season two. You got to get past the first season. Uh-huh. It doesn't kind of make sense. They don't get their stride until blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I remember, was famous of getting that. Mm. There's a lot of famous shows that have tough first seasons. But I think there's a little bit different in this idea. And this is more like, we need a whole season to sell you on the concept of the show. Like, this right. concept is so... You're going to dislike it until we really get into, like, explaining all the angles of it. And then you'll be like, oh, I get it. Mm-hmm. And the show that came to mind first, and it's almost a little even cheating, because it the first season takes place entirely before the source material even. So it is made up for the show, is Preacher. Do you remember how the first season of Preacher was like not the story yet? Right. Like, we didn't get into the swing of the story until season two.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe we heard him use like the voice maybe once or something, right?
Right.
Something like that, but it's not really and about we didn't the whole even world like, of the spiritual.
He had the voice at the very beginning, but then we flash back to before he had the voice, right? And like Yeah. Oh, no, maybe we don't. I don't actually
remember.
That
might be later. But, that might be later.
But for sure, the story is him traveling across America, and he doesn't start traveling until the end of the first season.
Right, right. Because then that's when we really got to get...
They blow up that town, I believe.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I don't mind it.
It was a fun season. The season was good. I enjoyed it.
And it's like, the thing is like, if you're going to do that, like, let's say Sugar is only meant to be one season, but if you're setting all this up just to be like, boom, and then that's it, that's kind of weird, you know what I'm saying? Where it's
do
like,
we know this is meant to be one season?
Well, no, we don't. We don't for sure.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, this
can keep going.
Yeah, you never know what anybody's gonna cancel or whatever. But I'm just saying, like, if you're setting it up like a whole season pilot, that's implying that then now we're gonna be able to get to more story, maybe, you know, depending on what it is, depending on what the hook is. Maybe it's an alternate, like an anthology type thing, you know.
I think what maybe people should know going into Sugar is that if you're going into a like hard-boiled detective story, that might not be what you're gonna get. You're gonna be missing out in, I think, the like whodunit-ness of it and all the like gathering the clues and stuff like that. I don't think that's the point of Sugar. I don't think that's what you're supposed to be getting out of this show, but I think that's a bummer, because I think the world is hungry for a show like that. Yeah. What this show ends up being might still be good. Seems like it's pretty okay.
Yeah.
You're gonna finish it?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna stick with it. Yeah, the week to week thing I kinda like again, because it's like I feel like I'll watch one, you'll think about it for a little while, forget about it, be like, oh yeah, I'm curious what's going on with that, and then go back check in with it, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then just the last note I had was that he doesn't like guns. I thought that was so funny because it's like pretty typical. But then she gives him a gun that's like from a movie, and all of a sudden he's like,
do you remember where it's from?
Was it a Sam Spade type?
I don't know. John Huston? Was it a John Huston movie?
I forget. They reference it. It's like a black and white movie, and they're like, oh, this was used in that movie. But no, I can't remember.
Yeah,
exactly. Same. But it's more about the reference stuff and more of the character building through film and stuff, which
if
I think it's cool.
Very good. I realize that this is probably not what it is, but I made it up and now I'm fascinated by it. The idea that somebody can use like the vibe of old movies to like take advantage of situations is like a cool power. Like someone should, there should be some sort of it's sort of reminiscent of, what's his name? Woody Allen's movie where Humphrey Bogart helps him out.
Oh, the purple, was it Rose of Purple Cairo?
Is that Purple Rose of Cairo?
Purple Rose of Cairo,
where he hallucinates Sam Spade. But there's another movie,
where
isn't
he's
there?
In it? Because that's Jeff Daniels, I think.
There's a guy who just is a detective, and a black and white hallucination detective appears to give him advice on how to be.
Yeah, I don't got
I might be mixing up genres there. For sure, Purple Rose of Cairo, I think, has that. That where like he talks to Humphrey Bogart,
time shifting element to some other time in the past. Yeah,
but anyways, I like this idea. Somebody should write this. Maybe I'll write it.
Yeah, it's
look out for that show.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So Dan, you're gonna finish both. I think I might stick with Sugar. But
I thought
we'll
you
let
might.
You know.
I thought you might. Yeah. Cool.
Until next time. Adios.
Bye. Down to watch.